This is Dorothy Woodend for the Tyee. It's a mad, 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 and occasionally very bad world. Two films playing this week make this notion readily apparent. One is a mild-mannered documentary called The Killer Within, and the other, 28 weeks later, is a dystopian horror film. They're very different, but they share one common idea. Rage, or what happens when people succumb to the desire to kill other people. 28 Weeks Later is the sequel to Danny Boyle's film 28 Days Later, which was originally released in 2002. In the first film, a group of animal rights activists accidentally unleash a virus that causes humans to vomit blood and murder everybody in sight. It was not pretty. Boyle's film was also one of the first to introduce fast flesh eaters, dubbed the infected, as opposed to the slow, staggering zombies made famous by George Romero. The story was also timely in a number of other ways. The scenes in which Cillian Murphy wanders through a deserted London, past billboards crammed with posters searching for missing relatives, reminded one of another city that had suffered a very similar calamity. There's a desire lately to let real-life events bleed into fiction, and 28 Weeks Later uses and abuses this concept. Like many classic horror movies, the film begins with a family torn apart, this time quite literally. At the height of the initial rage virus outbreak, Don and Alice, played by Robert Carlyle and Catherine McCormick, are hiding in an isolated farmhouse with a few other stragglers. To all appearances, they look like a loving couple, committed to each other even in the face of terrible events and smooching up a storm, while outside the ravenous hordes of the infected are looking for fresh kibble. But the moment the baddies show up, what does Daddy do but cut and run, leaving Mummy behind? This being a horror film, everybody ultimately gets what's coming to them, and in the worst way possible. The title refers to the six-month period, during which the initial outbreak of the rage virus has died out, as the infected slowly starve to death. No more tasty humans left to sup upon, London is once more safe, or as safe as it ever was. The American army has moved in and set up a bunkered zone on the Isle of Dogs as a staging ground for the reintroduction of the civilian population. If you think this seems like a very bad idea, you're right, but that never stops anybody in a horror movie. If people did the reasonable thing, nothing would ever happen at all. All around the heavily fortified community, the remains of London fester. But inside the gates, there's hot and cold running water and electricity 24 hours a day, as the nice soldier lady duly informs the new arrivals. Two of the people being reintroduced to the city are Alice and Don's children, Andy and Tammy, who luckily enough were on holiday in Spain during the initial rage outbreak. Their reunion with their father is sweet but short-lived.
What happened to Mom?
They both want to know, and Daddy is quick to discount his part in her fate. Naughty Daddy. Humans being humans, they're never content to stay put, and when the kids stage a brief bid for freedom, they bring home more than they bargained for. Herein things get complicated for everybody. The film has a twist, and I won't spoil it for you, but love and forgiveness is what allows the second rage outbreak to reemerge in the usual howling and bloody fashion. The kids take it on the lam with the help of a kindly medical officer and a reluctant sniper. But worse than the infected run amok are the American soldiers who institute a code red, which basically means kill everything that moves. The nihilism of the film's final coda is easy to dismiss, but it's also in keeping with the logic of the film. There isn't any hope, not over here and not over there. But nihilism is kind of cheap, in my opinion. It's an easy out. Oh, we're screwed, so, you know, what's the point? That said, there's also something missing in the sequel that was amply present in the first, and that's beauty. The original film was shot on digital video, and it had a grainy loveliness that made the more horrific elements jump out. The subtext was also more apparent, that our simian bloodlust was only one half of a gene away. One bite from a bad monkey, and all hell breaks loose. The survivors in the first film had little more than baseball bats and machetes to save themselves from the zombie hordes. And in the second film, the soldiers are armed to the teeth with everything from machine guns to poison gas to flamethrowers, and it all does them very little good. Once the virus sinks its teeth into the general population, it spreads like wildfire. The seed at the heart of the second rage virus outbreak comes out of human failing, but it's a failing that pretty much everybody can understand, which makes it seem a little unfair somehow. Just as in the original film, the PETA types who released the first outbreak weren't actually the ones who created the virus, they were simply trying to do what they believed was right. And that's the one thing that no one in any horror film has ever managed to contend very well with: good intentions. Road to hell is paved with them, or so they say, and then 28 weeks later, that sentiment comes to full red flower.